Hello again. This is Mark Emery. In this presentation, I want to illustrate how our God-given rights to private property are converted into regulated commercial activity, where it can be taxed, and the net effect of that being that we're taxed on a natural right, which is theft of your property. That property is your labor. Labor is sacrosanct, as has been confirmed time and again by the Supreme Court. Okay, so I'm going to use the context of the certificate of title to your automobile and the state registration requirements. We're going to discuss that particular subject here in the next few minutes. And again, this is not going to be a detailed legal analysis with all the supporting case sites and this and that. I want to illustrate to you the power that knowledge can bring to you by virtue of sharing some of my personal experiences with you. I've lived these issues and had a fair amount of fun with it, and I want to share that with you. And I don't expect you to do what I did, okay, what I'm going to share with you here, at least not at this point in time. In fact, I hope you don't, at least until we get back to the rule of law, which could be quite soon, based on some reports. But right now, police are very aggressive and dangerous these days, so be aware of that. And on that point, let me just interject something. In one of my presentations on this page, on the initial contact, I talked about keeping your window open only a crack if stopped by the police. And here's a perfect example. I just saw a video yesterday, as a matter of fact. Police pulled a guy over, and apparently he was having a stroke. He wasn't responding to the police officers, but his window was wide open. So he did manage to stop his car, and he was just sitting there. He wasn't responding. The police were shouting at him, giving him orders, and he was just sitting there completely unaware of what was going on, apparently. The police had a fit. They tased him. Wide open window. The taser didn't seem to affect him at all. Of course, he was having a stroke. He was near unconscious. And so because of that, then they moved on to the next phase where they just covered his face with pepper spray. And I've had a little experience with tear gas, and that is some nasty stuff. I have no idea what pepper spray is like, but I can only imagine it, too, is some pretty nasty stuff. Anyway, poor guy having a stroke, just got mauled by these police. And perfect example of how to protect yourself or why you want to protect yourself. These things do happen. All right, so let's get to the point. Let's talk about certificate of title. What is a certificate of title? Why don't they just call it the title? Title of ownership. Verification of ownership. What is certificate of title? A certificate certifies the title, but it's not the title. Okay, so what is a certification? Black's Law Dictionary says that this certification is 1, the act of attesting, 2, the state of having been attested, 3, an attested statement, 4, the writing on the face of a check by which it is certified. And then they go on, there's other legal applications of that term. The point being that certification is the fact that something is being attested to in, how shall I say it? In the second party, it's not the actual thing, but they're attesting to the fact that yes, there is a title, and we attest to the fact that that there is a title, but this is not the title. So it makes you wonder a little bit. You, the man upon the land or woman, has legal title, which is use and benefit. It's much like your mortgage, okay? When you put a mortgage on your home, you have legal title to it, which means you get to use it, but the real owner, which has beneficial interest or beneficial ownership, which is the true owner, the true title, that's the bank. Okay? Your vessel, and we talk about vessel in some detail in the Accepted for Value audio that I did on the Accepted for Value page. It's an introduction audio. Very interesting if you go to that when you have time. But your vessel, which is the trust or the bond, in all capital letters, represented by your name in all caps, is the owner. All right, now that trust is actually created and owned by the state. Thus, the state is the true holder of the bona fide title. Here's an example. You may have had group health insurance with your employer at one point in time. All right, what you get to verify that you are insured, you get a certificate of insurance, don't you? You don't get an actual insurance policy. The employer is the owner of the policy. He pays for the policy. He receives the policy. That's the contract. All right, that's the instrument. You, as the employee, receive the certificate of insurance, which merely attests to the fact that you are insured by virtue of the insurance policy, which is owned by somebody else. It's the same thing with your certificate of title. Okay, so who owns the title? Where is the title? Where does the title come from and where does it go? Here's an interesting little tidbit for you. The actual title that comes from the manufacturer with a brand new car to the dealership is the manufacturer's statement of origin, the MSO. All right? Now, if you are knowledgeable and you want true ownership of that vehicle, you would tell the dealer, I'm going to pay cash for the vehicle and I want the MSO. And he'll ask you, well, don't you want to register it with the state? Don't you want to get a certificate of title? And anybody in their right mind who understands the alternatives would say, of course not. All right, but here's what happens. You pay cash for the car. The dealer sends the true title, the MSO, to the state. When you voluntarily register that automobile with the state, it's a voluntary act. Okay? Key point is that the dealer is not operating with full disclosure. He's selling you the rights, title, and interest to the property, which is the car. You are paying for that, but you don't get that. When the MSO goes to the state now holds title to the car. All you get is a certificate of title. So what we have going on here is fraudulent conversion of assets. Your assets are being fraudulently converted in a bait and switch scheme. You're paying for a quid pro quo transaction. You want ownership of the car, but you don't get it. All you get is legal title. You don't get beneficial interest. Just like living in your home, which is owned by the bank. Okay? So that's a fraud right up front. And we need to be aware of that. You can only get the certificate of title if the vehicle is registered with the state. The certificate of title, just like your health insurance with your employer. It's a private insurance program designed to protect you against secret liens. It's not obligatory for everybody, all right? But you can only get the certificate of title if you prove certain things. And those certain things are that you prove that you are completely subject to the state. Let me read for you right out of the Colorado Revised Statutes. I refer to Colorado because I lived there and I've done the research. Colorado Revised Statutes, CRS, Title 42, Volume 6, Section 106. Certificates of Registration and Plates. All right, Section 1, Paragraph 1. No certificate of registration of any motor vehicle required by law or license plates, therefore, shall be issued by the director or any of his agents, except in the following cases. Okay? So we're very clear that you can only get plates or certificate of registration on your motor vehicle if you meet these requirements. First of all, you, the applicant, must have procured and exhibited to the director or his agent, and they have on file an official Colorado certificate of title for such vehicle in order to register your vehicle. Okay? Why couldn't they accept a certificate of title from Kansas or Texas? Because that would indicate that those states are the owner of the car. Colorado only wants to register its owned vehicles. And you'll see why in a minute. The applicant, B, the applicant must submit evidence to the director or his agent that satisfies that officer or agent that an official Colorado certificate of title to such motor vehicle has been issued or is on file pursuant to the provisions of the law. Okay, so what does all this mean and how do we use it? Let's go back a little bit. Let's look at some definitions. All right, first of all, you must be a resident or doing business to get the registration and certificate of title. CRS 42-1-102, definition 81, is definition of resident. Okay. In law, words are everything. You have to look at every word with a mind that's outside the box. Do not assume that any word is what you normally would presume it to mean in the normal course of everyday conversation. Okay, have you ever thought what the word resident means or where that comes from? It's made up really of two parts. Res is Latin. It's a Latin word for the thing. Ident is the root to the word identify or identified. All right? So a resident is the thing identified as what is the question? As theirs? As their property? As the one subject? Okay? Now here are the definition, getting back to CRS 42-1-102, definition number 81. Resident means any person who owns or operates any business in this state, or any person who has resided within this state for a period of 90 days, or has obtained gainful employment within this state, whichever shall occur first. Okay? So, you are considered a resident of the state if you own or operate any business that's a franchise. That's a privilege granted by the state. That's a regulated activity, right? If you're owning or operating a business, that's commerce, that's a commercial activity subject to the legislative code. All right, so they got you there if you're operating a business in this state. Or any person who has resided within the state for a period of 90 days consecutively. or who has obtained gainful employment. Now, if you have resided in the state, you are considered a resident, the thing identified. You maintain a permanent address, you have a street address, and other factors which identify you as being a resident. That brings you under commercial jurisdiction, the jurisdiction, the legislative jurisdiction of the state, a resident. Or if you've gained gainful employment, that again is a franchise of the state and is a commercial activity, which brings you under the jurisdiction. Okay, so I'll talk about resident in a little bit, but that's a very interesting subject matter. I never admit to being a resident. I never have a permanent address. Stood in front of the judge one time, and the judge says, "Well, what's your address?" I came back, "You mean a permanent address?" And she says, "Yeah, what's your address?" I go, "Well, I don't have a permanent address." And she kind of looked at me kind of strange. So, well, where do you live? And, you know, she's trying to establish these facts that I am, in fact, a resident and therefore subject to jurisdiction so they could proceed against me. Okay, and once you know the game, you can have a little bit of fun with it. And on one hand, you could say, well, this guy's really being a smart aleck. He just really thinks he's something. But it's not the case at all. Think about it. What address have you ever had in the past that was permanent? None. All of your past addresses have changed, haven't they? You don't have a permanent address. You're only on this earth for a short while. Whatever address you have, even if you were born there and have never lived anywhere else, is not going to be permanent. You heard about the earthquake in Nepal. When was that? In May? Mount Everest dropped by several inches. If I recall correctly, it's now 4 inches shorter since the earthquake of Nepal than it was prior to the earthquake. Mount Everest is not in a permanent location. It's moving. So, permanent address? No, I don't have a permanent address. And I don't reside. Coming from a Christian perspective, I am a sojourner upon the land. I move about. I go where I can. I go where I will. I go where I'm needed. And I'm always on the move. I never stay in the same place for too long. I don't have a permanent address. I'm a sojourner. Talk more about that in a little bit. All right, so the key is being a resident engaged in operating any business in the state brings you under the jurisdictional purview where you can be regulated because all commerce is regulated. So speaking of commerce, let's look at definitions, again, taken from Colorado Revised Statutes. In Title 42, Volume 1, Section 102, which is the definitions section. And in all bodies of law, you can find the definitions at the very beginning of that section of the law. Okay, you probably know that. What is an automobile? Definition number 8. It means any motor vehicle. Great. Let's look up the term motor vehicle. Definition number 58. Motor vehicle means any self-propelled vehicle which is designed primarily for travel on the public highways and which is generally and commonly used to transport persons or property over the public highways. Well, that's a key word, transport. Where do we find transport? We find transport in the definition of commercial vehicle, which is definition 17.5, which says commercial vehicle means a vehicle used to transport cargo or passengers for profit, hire, or otherwise to further the purposes of a business or a commercial enterprise. So a commercial vehicle is used to transport cargo or passengers for profit or hire. All right. Similar term is transporter. Means every person engaged in the business of delivering vehicles of a type required to be registered under Articles 1 to 4. That's very specific. All right, so let's try and clarify this a little bit further. We can go to Black's Law Dictionary, 7th edition, look up transportation as a noun. It is the movement of goods or persons from one place to another by a carrier. Transportation, movements of goods or person by a carrier. So we look at carrier. What's a carrier? An individual or organization that transports passengers or goods for a fee. All right, so by virtue of definition, you see how that if you are engaged in the activity of operating a motor vehicle on the public highways, by virtue of definition, you're engaged in commerce, and of course, that's how we get regulated. All right, so everything is steered into a corner whereby you are engaged in commerce, and that's how we are required to get licenses, pay fees, be regulated by rules, regulations. And if we violate too many of those rules or regulations, what happens? You get too many infractions. Guess what? They take your car. They take the car back. It's not your car, remember? If you violate too many rules, your conditional use of that vehicle is suspended, and they take their property back away from you. You're not following the rules. You have too many infractions. Therefore, you have lost your privileges for the use of the state-owned vehicle. That's how it works, isn't it? Now, how could they take your property from you if it was, in fact, your property? That can't happen in law. They can't take something that's not theirs. And so by virtue of the contract, which is your driver's license, the contract with the state, you've agreed to abide by all of these things, and you've violated the contract. All right, so owning private property is not a privilege. It's a God-given right, and your property represents your labor. They cannot take your property and your labor if it's truly yours. It's inviolable. It can't be taken from you. So if that automobile were truly your property, there would be no contracts, no fees, no fines, no taxes, no rules, regulations, or penalties. You have volunteered into these things for the privilege of using a state-owned vehicle, of which the best you can ever get out of it is a certificate of title, when in fact the state holds the title the whole time. Okay, so let me tell you how I dealt with this issue myself. A few stories, kind of fun. I bought a van for cash. And understanding these things, I looked at that certificate of title that I had, and I saw on the front of it, it says, void if altered. And I looked on the back of it, and I saw where it said, do not mutilate, or void if mutilated, or something along those lines. All right. Now, at this time, I was aware of a group that understands these issues very well. This group is a church. It's a private church. It's not a 501c3 tax-exempt church. This is a church of sovereign Americans that understand these things quite well. And they had their own private registration system where an individual could take his property, register it with the church under private registration so that there was an authenticated third-party verification of ownership and protection from secret liens. This church also issued identity documents very similar to a driver's license. They issued their own title, and all the related documents that normally the state would issue, but these were private. All right? There's no law against any third party providing a similar service to what the state provides. All right? State can't hold a monopoly on private insurance and protection. So understanding these issues, at the time I was living in Oklahoma, I knew very well how things operate in terms of being a resident, operating a business in the state, and the requirements then to register the vehicle, have the certificate of title and all that we've just covered. So I wrote a letter to the Oklahoma Tax Commission, which is the equivalent of the Department of Motor Vehicles. They have similar authority to the DMV in other states. In Oklahoma, they call it the Tax Commission. Okay, so I wrote a cover letter to the Oklahoma Tax Commission basically stating that this van, VIN number such and such, identified it, is non-commercial. It's not engaged in any business. In fact, it's owned by a church out of state, which is non-resident to the state of Oklahoma. However, I do drive this vehicle for church purposes, and it is located within the state more than it is outside the state. And therefore, I asked the Oklahoma Tax Commission, I would like to register this vehicle to the state of Oklahoma. Could you please advise how I can register a non-commercial vehicle not engaged in business in the state and not operated by any resident? And of course, I knew in advance what the answer was, but I wanted to get it in writing because I was anticipating a possible confrontation at some point in time with my Kingdom of Heaven license plates, which I had affixed to the vehicle. Remember, I had this registered to the church. I was officially an ambassador for the Kingdom of Heaven, which is true. I am a Christian, and that is my function, so I have no qualms about that designation whatsoever. All right, so I sent this letter into the Oklahoma Tax Commission. I got back their response, which was perfect. Dear Mr. Mark, we're very sorry, but under the conditions that you have specified, you are not able to register that vehicle in the state of Oklahoma. I go, perfect. The law cannot require the impossible. And so I'm anticipating that if I'm ever in front of a judge at some point in the future because of my Kingdom of Heaven license plates and non-state registration and foreign documentation, that I can show good faith that I attempted to register it, but the law would not allow it. All right, so I was thinking ahead. Now, at the time, I lived in downtown Oklahoma City, right downtown, just two blocks from where the Murrah Building was bombed. And about four blocks in one direction was the city police station, and about six blocks the other direction from where I lived was the sheriff's office, sheriff's headquarters, county sheriff department. Every time that I pulled off the highway to head downtown to get to my abode, my domicile, police cars and sheriff's deputies were swirling all around. I'd pull up to a stoplight and there'd almost inevitably be someone behind me. Never got pulled over for the Kingdom of Heaven license plates. I recall times when I had to get to appointment and I couldn't afford any delays. I would just pray, Lord, please just make me invisible. I don't need a headache right now. Just make me invisible. Make me invisible. And he did. I never got pulled over, but I did get tested on this issue, and it was a beautiful vindication. Living in an apartment downtown, long story short, someone snuck in my window at night, robbed me. On the way out, grabbed the keys. I heard the door close when he was on his way out. I chased him out, only to see the taillights of my van going down the road. So I filed a police report, and of course, police didn't do anything. I had a motorhome at the time. I was getting ready to take off on a long trip, and a couple months later, you know, I'd have my mail forwarded to me at my wherever I was at the time, maybe on a bi-weekly basis or something. I'd have it bundled up and shipped to me by FedEx, and I'd check on my mail. One time in my mail, a couple months later, there was a letter from an apartment complex. The van had been abandoned there. The apartment complex was going to sell the van in an auction if I didn't come and get it. Okay? So by virtue of some documentation they found inside the van, they were able to identify me as the owner, and they got my address from some papers that were in there. All right, so I got this letter. They're going to sell the van. So I'm many hundreds of miles away at the time. So I notify the police, the Oklahoma City Police. I go, hey, I know where the van is. You got the stolen vehicle report. It's a matter of record. The van is over here at this apartment building. Please go get it, impound it, and I'll take care of the matter when I get back. They did. The van was in the impound. So I get back home, and I finally go to recover the van, which had a fair amount of damage and was not in really good condition. But in any event, the police says, sure, all you have to do is get it registered to the state, because we cannot allow you to take a vehicle out of here that's not registered to the state. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness. Okay. So here we go. Back and forth. We tried several times. I came back to the impound lot desk on several occasions, trying to hit up different people to see if I'd get a different response, and it was the same response every time. Finally, I remembered that I had this letter. I hadn't thought about it previously, and there was one old guy that I had been kind of beaten up on for some time, and he was getting kind of sick of me. Keep coming back and pestering him to get my van out. And I brought my letter from the tax commission. I said, officer, take a look at this. You want me to register the van? Take a look at this letter from the Oklahoma Tax Commission. And he took one look at that. He kind of shook his head. And all he needed was to be able to pass the buck on to somebody else so that he wouldn't get in trouble for violating the rules. And he gave me the keys and says, good luck. I had to pay some fees, and I got the van out of there without having to register it to the state. Okay, so they recognized the fact that this was private property and that I had acted in good faith trying to get it registered, but understanding the law and how it's situated, I was able to properly position myself to avoid state registration. So I think that goes to show that, yes, there are alternative ways of handling this. All right, let me give you one other real quick, and we'll wrap it up. My contemporaries during my time with the law club that I was involved in Denver back in the 90s, understood these things as well. Of course, we studied this quite intently, and there's a different way to handle it. I didn't mention that, I didn't mention that I had voided the certificate of title, and I sent it back in to the state. In big, bold, black magic marker, I wrote void across the front face, and on the back, I think it was null, N-U-L-L, null and void on both sides, and I sent that back in with a letter indicating that my desire was to terminate the private registration and certificate of title agreements with the state of Oklahoma, and I had other arrangements. Okay, so I had basically nullified state registration and certificate of title. Who does that? Nullifies their certificate of title. Most people guard that as treasure. I nullified mine and pulled it out of the state. All right, so here's another way to handle it. Some of my contemporaries had done the same thing, nullified their state registration, nullified their certificates of title, canceled those contracts with the state. They would file an affidavit of ownership and take allodial property ownership to the automobile and hold it in allodium. I'll spell that, A-L-L-O-D-I-U-M, in allodium. That is a noun defined as an estate held in fee simple absolute. So you don't have the split title that you do with your mortgage, where the bank is the owner, but you have the rights to use it. The same as the certificate of title, where the state is the owner, but you have the right to use it. When you have property held in allodium, it's fee simple, meaning the title is joint. You have beneficial ownership and legal ownership. Beneficial title and legal title are combined, fee simple, absolute. There is no other claim on that property, period. All right, so we cancel the state contracts. We file an affidavit of ownership identifying the property. And we had a provider that could make license plates for us. So we'd file this affidavit of ownership with the county recorder that would identify who is the owner, identifies the vehicle, and states that it's held as a non-commercial conveyance held in allodium. So we'd have our own license plates made up. Across the top, two lines in smaller text would say, this vehicle is non-commercial and held in allodium ownership. It is registered with the Denver County Recorder. Now, in the broad space across the center, which is normally where the license plate numbers would appear, we would have numbers as well. The numbers might look like this, 154-12-313. And underneath each of those groupings of numbers would be the text. Under 154 was the book number. Under the number 12 was the volume. Under 313 is the page. So the number shown on the license plate was the book, volume, and page number in the county recorder's office where this affidavit was filed. So people could not say, well, you're not operating with social responsibility. If the owner of this car runs it through a crowd of people in a festival on the street, you know, there's a social responsibility there. We need to know who the owner is, who's responsible. All right? You couldn't argue that because the ownership of the property held in allodium was recorded with the county recorder's office. And then in smaller text below, on the bottom of the license plate, it would say, all rights reserved and none waived ever. And then we would quote CRS, Colorado Revised Statutes, 4-1-207. And that's the state codification of the UCC. Title IV is the Uniform Commercial Code in Colorado Revised Statutes. 1-207 is a real simple reservation of rights. Okay, so we're performing, we're accepting the operation of law under the reservation of rights at all times and waiving them never. So we can say that a party who, with explicit reservation of rights, performs or promises performance or assents to performance in a manner demanded or offered by the other party does not thereby prejudice the rights reserved. So just by the act of doing something, sometimes you can waive your rights. All right, if you do something under reservation of rights with UCC 1-207, which I understand now has been changed, doing it without prejudice or under protest, is sufficient basically to maintain your rights. So, where are we at? We can see that there are alternative ways of doing business, that the things that we've been told through our entire lives may be true to a point, but there are alternatives, that you are regulated by virtue of your engagement in commerce by applying for benefits from the state, which you do not necessarily need. And what, in the process of doing that, what you're doing is you're converting your God-given natural rights, your rights to property, your rights to your labor, your rights to free use of your property held in allodium. You're turning all of that over for the porridge of benefits issued by the state, which if you don't follow the rules, they can suspend those benefits and privileges. Okay, so you see how that works? So the certificate of title is not title. It merely evidences that title does exist. Someone else has it. You know now the state has it. And you can see how we've been tricked and duped into paying fines, fees, penalties, and through these things we are controlled. Okay? So we'll talk more about dealing with these issues and how to come out of Babylon in another presentation. I'm getting on a little bit long in the tooth here, and I want to wrap it up here. So I hope that helps your perception of reality, and you can see how things operate now from a better viewpoint, and that, yes, there are alternatives. All right, so that's it for now on Certificate of Title and Registration of Automobile, and we'll be bringing more to you here very shortly. Thank you for your attention, and God bless.